Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hey! Sit on it. It's me, Richard Herring. Welcome to another Rahalastapa. I was just channeling the Fonz. Can't you remember the Fonz? He was cool, man, like me. So, welcome to the Rahalastapa. This is, comes from the Bristol Old Vic, one of my favourite venues in the world. I mean, I haven't been to them all, but all the ones I've been to, it's just right up there. With one of my favourite people in the world, Mark Olver. Very funny man. You may not have heard of him. Please stick around if you haven't, because you're going to love him. He's very funny. He's very interesting. And he's got a lot of tales to tell. If you like these podcasts, why not come and see one live in 2020? Go to richherring.com/gigs so you can find out where I'm going to be. At the moment, so that's the Leicester Square Theatre in March and April, Birmingham, March 28th, and Norwich in April. Both Birmingham and Norwich look like they're going to sell out, and I will be very quick if you want to come to those one of those two or both of those two Norwich gigs. There aren't many tickets left. Go to gofasterstrike.com to buy your badges, your card games, your books, and your DVDs if you're into that kind of malarkey. Everything helps us keep these things going. I want to do lots more interesting stuff in 2020, and I would like to thank you so much for the support you have given me over the years. It makes an old man feel very happy. Okay, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Rahalastapa with Mark Us Over. Us. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bristol Old Vic. Please welcome a man who the last time he was here, he was sitting in a royal box with Sid Little, and that's true, it's Richard Herring. Wow! Look at this! Amazing! Thank you very much! Thank you. Love to see you. Thank you, Bristol. It's always fantastic to be here. I was just in Leicester last, and honestly, that place is the worst. They won't mind me saying it's the shittest place in the world. So being anywhere would be great after that. But being in Bristol is fantastic. And yeah, last time I was here, I was in that Royal Box there. I was sitting next to Sid Little from Little and Large, watching a W.C. Fields film. I was thinking, I've got to get a photo with him, the two rubbish ones from Tube Double X. He had to go and get a train. I never got my photo with Sid. It's a lifetime regret. Anyway, welcome to Richard Herring's Loathing Slave Owner Theatres podcast. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I wouldn't play the Colston Hall if they paid me. Even if it was open and they said, we reckon you can sell that many tickets, I wouldn't go there. It's named, people at home won't know, it's named after a slave owner. Though they may change the name when it reopens. Who knows? Colston, Ian Colston. So we're here at the Old Vic. I've just found out today Old Vic was the most racist man in Bristol. Actually, he was so racist. He was actually worse than owning slaves. That's how bad he was. Really properly full-on racist. So I have to give this one a miss as well. It's cancelled now. Next time, I'll do the gig tonight, but I won't be coming back next week. That's all I'm saying. But I was talking to the first ever bungee jumper. The first ever bungee jumper was jumped off of the Clifton Suspension Bridge, as you know. It's very cool. He calls it Rahal Ethabar. It is great to be. Oh dear. It's great to be in Bristol. It is fantastic. Bristol, lots of things to be very proud about. Bristol. Ribena was invented in Bristol by Ian Ribena. Easter eggs were invented in Bristol by the fries and chocolate, solid chocolate. That's not bad. The blanket was invented in Bristol. And you wouldn't think the blanket would need inventing. But it did. And do you know who it was invented by? Edward Blanket. I'm not even fucking kidding. But the best thing... there's two great... breasts were invented here in Bristol. Something else. So well done for that. But even better than that, the Bristol stool chart, that must be what you are the most proud of here, was invented in Bristol, which is someone in Bristol, the hospital in Bristol, wanted to classify all the different types of poo there were. And they must have studied really hard. They came up with 7 different types. I have 7 different types a day, mate. That is not, there's more than 7. Just to run you, this is the Bristol stool chart. This is a real thing. It's named after your city. I would take as an insult. Type 1, separate hard lumps like nuts. Yeah, if you've had this one recently, cheer for it. That's what I'm saying. So anyone that is hard to pass, I've never had nuts, I have to say. Type 2, sausage shaped but lumpy. Type 3, like a sausage, so sausage shaped. I mean, but with cracks on its surface. Someone's job was to do that. Someone was getting out, do you mind if I have a look at your poo? Oh, that's a 3. Type 4, like a sausage. I mean, they're all like sausage, aren't they? It's not like a sausage or snake. They're just trying to pretend that they thought of a different thing. Oh, yeah, it's like enough. Smooth and soft. That's the best type to have if you've got that. Well done. Type 5, soft blobs with clear-cut edges. Easy to pass. Type 6, fluffy pieces with ragged edges. A mushy stool. Yeah, that's my general. I think that's my general. Type 7, watery, no solid pieces, entirely liquid. We've all been there. So it's a Sunday. I think there are more than 7 types. My son did one the other day. And my son is 2 years old, not quite. And he did one that was honestly as big as a can of Coke. And, like, much bigger than he is inside. I mean, I called it the reverse TARDIS because it's much bigger on the outside than it could possibly have been on the inside. That is, but like that thick. I don't know how it came out. I mean, I haven't studied his asshole in a lot of detail, but it's really little. So they missed that one. Anyway, I hope you enjoy myself. So we've been raising Kickstarter money and I spend it all on this. We ran out of money a bit up there, so the staircase ran out. Just a piano, some busts of stuff. You know, just, it's important. We can only use it here in the Bristol Old Vic. We're just trashing that the minute this is over. There's genuinely backstage, we're not allowed to touch it because it's a prop, but there's genuinely a big tray of Ferrero Rocher's backstage, which It felt like a little reference for me. But anyway, we're going to crack on with our show. So our first only guest this week, he's the first and only guest, is probably best known for his warm-up work on two episodes of For Fact's Sake. That is why we're here tonight. It's actually quite hard to choose something for him, and that almost is the best thing that he has done. Will you please welcome the amazing Mark Oliver, ladies and gentlemen? Come in. Yeah, you sit there. Sit there, hello. Pick up a microphone, I should have said that. Pick up a microphone. How are we doing?
I'm all right, thanks. Good. I've just discovered that the best thing I've ever done is two episodes of a short-lived TV show with Brendan O'Carroll.
Yeah. So I was interested in that. So was it the I Don't Remember This Show? It's quite recent.
Yeah, last year.
Yeah. So Mrs. Brown's Boys, is that the guy?
Yeah, Brendan.
Yeah.
Hosted a show that definitely wasn't QI. and they filmed it in Glasgow before they filmed Mrs. Brown's Boys.
Right.
He wanted to film it after Mrs. Brown's Boys, but they filmed it before Mrs. Brown's Boys because he wanted to host it with his moustache.
Right.
Because he has a moustache.
Okay, yeah.
Which he has to get rid of when he's Mrs. Brown. But then they didn't have enough time after Mrs. Brown to do the show and wait for the moustache.
To grow back.
So he did it before.
Okay, well, that's interesting to know.
Good fact, isn't it?
It is. I reckon he'd get away with the moustache, but it's not. I don't think he's really convincing many people with Mrs. Brown, eh?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. But this was genuinely in the contract, and that was filmed 2018.
Yeah, that's right.
And
yeah.
They did six episodes, and I think actually I did more than two. I think I did.
Well, there's only two on IMDb, but a lot of your work is not on IMDb because you just told me about five things backstage that you've casually tossed in.
Yeah, but also you've been trying to Google me to find out shit.
Yeah.
You've not found out anything.
I haven't.
You mentioned bungee jumping.
Yeah.
You might not have known that my dad was not there at the first ever bungee jump.
I did not. As long as his job wasn't to tie up the bungee at the top, that doesn't really matter, does it?
My dad was a policeman in the Clifton area of Bristol in the mid-70s when the bungee jump happened. And he found out. So, are most people here Bristolian? Yeah. Okay, so I can be sort of specific with locations and geography because, like, yes, thank you. My dad's patch was Clifton, and he was on Hotwells Road near the Rose of Denmark when he got on his radio, PC over, something's happening on the suspension bridge. Get to the suspension bridge. Some people are going to throw themselves off the suspension bridge attached to pieces of elastic. Can you get there now? And he was like, I'm on my way. And by the time he got from the Rose of Denmark to the suspension bridge, it had finished. Just gone.
He was at the bottom just trying to grab him. They kept on jumping and dancing out of the way.
No, he missed the whole thing. Like, I think the overs must be genetically programmed to not quite be there when successful things happen.
It was quite a punt, though, wasn't it? I don't know how much preparation those guys... They're the Oxford University Dangerous Sports Society, I believe, that did that. But do you think... if it was the first one, does that mean it was the first one ever, or had they tested it a bit somewhere else? Because it's quite a risk to do it.
And sort of started on low bridges, iron bridge, suspension bridge.
Or just chuck something over attached to some elastic and see whether it bounces or not. I mean, it's quite a specific thing, isn't it?
If they tested it, then it's that not takes first... away the magic, right? Like, that's some bullshit there. I want someone to literally...
Yeah. I mean, that's what we all want, and it would have been quite satisfying if
My dad's other claim to fame was there is a Samaritan sign on the suspension bridge, and it was my dad's idea to put it there.
That is a good idea.
He claims.
Yeah. I'd say the Samaritans probably deserve more of a round of applause than your dad's. It was my idea to put the number on there. Well, it was my fucking idea to have the Samaritans, mate.
I think it was the Samaritans' idea.
It was. But, you know, he had that terrible thing where he saw that guy jumping off and disappearing. And then,
yeah, that's a very good point.
That must and never happen again.
Oh, shit, that gives me an idea. Yeah. So, yeah, so that's all you found out about me?
That's well, I know your mum worked at a cinema.
Yep. Quality shit. Yeah. Well done.
Yeah.
God, this is going to be an amazing hour.
I mean, it was very difficult to find stuff out about
all these people were like, oh, it's going to be Russell Howard. It'll be Russell Howard. So it's like, oh, John Robbins. It'll be John Robbins. John Richardson. Matt Ewins. Oh, no, it's the fat flatmate. My mum worked in the cinema that is now the... Is it still called the Academy? Thanks. The nightclub.
Okay.
And that was the ABC on Frogmore Street.
Okay. Do you know her? Do you know his mum?
Philomena, my mum's name. Except it's not actually her name.
I want to know no more about that.
You don't want to know anymore?
No, I want to know. Why is she not? Why is her name Philomena, but that's not her name?
So, my mum was brought up in a convent.
Okay.
Properly, 1948 she was born. Properly, left on the step of a convent. Wow. And taken in. And there was, a note saying, this is Mary Philomena Griffin. That was her maiden name. Mary Philomena Griffin. And in the same week, in the same convent, another baby was put in... called Mary Philomena Griffin.
What?
So they called that one Mary Philomena and my mum Philomena Mary.
Someone was churning those girls out, weren't they? That's Mrs. Griffin, Miss Griffin, probably.
Yes, absolutely. Well, no, because I don't think that's how babies work. You don't have a baby and then a week later you're like, oh, I'm ready for another one.
Maybe there was just another one in there that she hadn't been expecting that just popped out a week later. Trying to, fuck, I've got to think of another name.
Yeah.
Got to get another basket.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not George Foreman. I've just called them... and then we found... my mum found, about 10 years ago, the other Mary Philomena Griffith.
Okay.
So my mum's name is Phil.
Right.
She's Philomena.
Yeah. Right, does Phil. She? Did she ever find the mother that left her on the doorstep?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, they get this. Usually they don't put their full name in, do they? They usually leave them on the doorstep and say, this is a baby, I'm not going to tell you who I am, fuck off. And go, you've got to look after it now. They don't usually say, I know, so her name is Griffin and I live at this address.
Yeah,
please.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, but she was. She found my nan when I was 9 or 10,
okay.
And we had this whole other family that we didn't know about. And even at the moment, literally right now, they are still trying to work out who my granddad is because my nan never told who it was. And
right.
We thought it might be the stepdad, the guy she married a couple of months later, but we don't think it's him, it's someone else.
Wow. Typical Bristol whore, hey?
London.
Oh, London, okay.
London.
Okay. Unlike everyone else in London, a whore.
When you said to me earlier, you said, if there's anything in the podcast that you're not 100% comfortable with, have a word with me and we'll just send me an email and we'll just cut it.
Yeah.
Would it be possible to take out the bit where you describe my nan as a typical...
I'm not sure it will be. Just
for accuracy,
she wasn't
not
Bristol.
So if you do a typical London whore, then I imagine then that can get through. I don't think she was typical. Or nothing about her was... Anyway.
No, that's fair enough. I apologise. She left babies on doorsteps, fuck her. So...
What? Literally what? What? You made
what about
it
the other
your,
one?
It,
the other one came out a week later.
Oh. She wasn't even other people's babies.
She got addicted to it.
It's Moorish.
If we're going to cut this, let's not do funny stuff. Let's stop doing the funny stuff. Well, I didn't get any of this from the from my research. That's no research about it. You're very hard man to pin down. You're a Bristol born and bred, proper Bristol man.
Yeah, yeah.
Typical Bristol virgin man.
Still live here.
Yeah.
Still live here.
Yeah.
As apart from, I don't know if you know about this, but there's quite a lot of people who make a big deal of being from Bristol or being from the West Country. who've not lived in the West Country for fucking years. When did you last live in the West Country?
I went and saw my mum and dad.
You went to see your mum?
Actually, not that recently.
Whereas, like, I've stayed in. Yeah, you know, yeah. I'm kind of, yeah.
Yeah, but you at least live in Bristol. I lived in Cheddar. That would be an awful place to stay in forever. Yeah. Is there stuff to do in Bristol?
Yeah,
there's
lot...
Cheddar Gorge. Come on. It's not bad. Yeah. Any Cheddar people in? Yeah. Kings of Wessex? Yeah. Fairlands? Yeah.
Still live there?
Still live in Cheddar? No.
Live in Bristol now?
No.
No. Axbridge?
Where?
Cornwall.
Cornwall.
Cornwall, blimey.
Typical Cornwall whore. Is that how that works?
Depends how many babies she's left on doorsteps. Let's not back reference it, we're going to cut it.
Oh, yeah, good point. You're getting rid of that. Good point.
So let's talk about your... I mean, so you'd lived with, in a house with lots of comedians.
Every
single Bristol comedian that's come through.
Every person that I've ever lived with has been nominated or won the main award in Edinburgh.
Wow.
Every one of the pricks has won. And I you know, they're success, whatever. I did 2 weeks of warm-up for Supermarket Sweep in Maidstone this year. So yeah. Who's the real winner? Russell Howard.
Russell Howard, probably.
I would say. But yeah, no, five of them. So we lived in a flat, myself, Russell Howard, John Richardson, and John Robbins.
Yeah.
And now I've got my own house. The flat was in Clifton, but I couldn't buy in Clifton, so I'm now in Brislington.
Yeah.
I live with Matt Ewins, who was nominated for the award 2 years ago. So,
wow.
So everyone I've heard from. All of them.
Yeah, but there's still time. One day you'll do a show about all the stuff that's gone on behind the scenes.
I don't think I will.
No.
No, I don't think I'll do Edinburgh. I mean I don't really do stand up. I probably gig, like, I do charity gigs in Bristol. I maybe gig once or twice a month. I do warm up 6 days a week. It's the weirdest fucking life.
Yeah. How did you get into that? I mean, obviously, it's a really difficult job, and you clearly are doing it very, very well, because everyone employs you.
I've done warm-up for shows that you have been on and been out in the first round of Pointless.
Yeah, yeah. You were backstage saying, Howard Jones, Rich, Howard Jones. But he never got a number one, so it's a good job I didn't say it.
Never get a number one. Yeah, I mean, I've been doing it since 2004. There was a TV programme that they made. It was called Kings of Comedy.
Oh, yes.
It was comedians in a Big Brother-style house. Does anyone remember this?
Vaguely, yeah. That's showbiz.
I mean, this is 500 comedy fans, and they all just went, not a fucking clue. old school comics, comics. Yeah, so yeah. I think Andrew Maxwell was in there. Andrew won it. Booth Bigraffo was in there. Ava Vidal, Janie Godley, but then Stan Boardman and
Mick Miller was in there.
Mick Miller was in there. The one that wasn't Lenny Henry or Tracy Ullman.
David Copperfield.
Yeah. He was in it.
It could have gone a different way, couldn't it, when it was the one that wasn't Lenny Henry? I said, fuck, here we go. Old Vixen.
and they wanted to make a comedy club so they could do the performance in the comedy club for the live show every Thursday. And I was running gigs at Jester's now, which used to be in the Tesco's in Stokes Croft that everyone was going to never use. And now everyone uses. Okay. They were going to boycott that Tesco's forever and ever. Okay.
Do you know this story?
No. Yeah, they got rid of the comedy club and put a Tesco's in, and it went really messy for ages. There was security there. It was going to absolutely kick off because it's on Stokes Croft and it was a Tesco's. Right. No one should ever go in there. And now it's really fucking popular. Yeah.
We don't care anymore. No one cares about anything anymore. You can do anything now. There's no repercussions for the worst crimes.
Oh, no, not in Bristol.
No.
Oh, no, not in Bristol. We care.
Okay.
We care about... zero waste.
Okay.
That's something we care about.
Yeah. Got Bristol money. You care about Bristol money?
Bristol pound. We care about that. We care about it to the extent that we care about it so much that we all refuse to use it.
Okay.
No one in this room has ever used the Bristol pound. We're all really fucking proud of the fact that we've got the Bristol pound.
Yeah.
But we don't use the Bristol pound.
I won't be accepting them after the show in return for books as well.
And so they came to watch me do the gig to build the TV studio, and then they went to look like a comedy club, and then they went, oh, well, we're doing it. Do you want to do the warm-up for it? And so I went, yeah, right, I'll do the warm-up. So I did it. Russell Brown was hosting it.
Yeah.
And then a couple of months later, did some other shows in 2004. And then in 2005, a show that I did a couple of times in Bristol called Deal or No Deal started.
Yeah.
So I did sort of one or two of them. 3,000. I did three. 3,000 episodes.
And how many a day do you do? So often lots a day, right?
We did about four a day.
Four a day.
We did four a day for almost exactly 10 years.
Right.
And so they recorded 3,500 episodes of Deal or No Deal, and I did about 3,000 of them.
Right.
I've been in a hot tub with Noel Edmonds.
Yeah. Was that how you got the job?
No.
No. Is that how you get the £250,000 box?
That's what's in your box. No, I... And you came to...
I did. It was one of the best days of my life. I was a massive fan of Deal or No Deal, especially to begin with, in that early series.
But also, because you learned very quickly the way to watch Deal or No Deal, was to watch the first 5 minutes and then fast forward, stop, fast forward, stop. Watch the... So you could probably do an episode in like 7 minutes, right?
Yeah.
But you liked it.
I did like it. I found it fascinating to begin with, and I liked all the characters. And I got to go to a party with all those... I think the first lot,
we did a gig together in the Hen and Chicken in Bedminster.
Yeah.
And I was going to a Deal or No Deal contestants reunion party.
It was a reunion, yeah.
And I was comparing for Rich, and he said, what are you doing afterwards? And you were, I don't know, you were probably just staying in Bristol and going to drink lonely in a hotel room?
Yeah, I should think so, yeah. That's what I usually would do.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I said, oh, well, I'm going to this party.
Yeah.
And you were like, I don't know you well enough to go to a party with you, and that sounds a bit shit. And I was like, oh, it's a Deal or No Deal contestants reunion special. And you were like, I'm in. And it was amazing.
It was amazing.
The most amazing thing about it was that there were people in there who were... There were a few people who recognised you.
Yeah.
So there weren't shitloads, because this was before you became the man you are.
The amazing, successful comedian I am now, yeah. It was sometime after the last time I was on TV, but yes.
It was in your ditch years. Can you describe them as
ditches? I think so. Let's use that vernacular.
I mean, it wasn't a deep ditch.
No.
I don't want to use gutter, because that's... That...
I think a gutter might be better than a ditch, though, to be honest. At least a gutter's in town.
You get ditches in town. What would you call... Fallow? You weren't fallow.
I wasn't fallow.
You were doing well.
I was doing all right.
You were doing some really good shows. Financially, where were you?
Well, I was all right, because I'd just done Time, Gentlemen, Please. So I was well off, but also a bit lost. So it's fair enough. So like, I was trying to work out what to do next, but I'd started back into stand-up at that point, obviously. So it was about 2004, 2005.
Yeah, exactly. So you
I was
were
on my way back up
out of the
out of the mean off the off the quite tall hill. I'd found a sort of rope ladder bridge that led to
the taller hill.
The much taller hill I'm on now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you weren't in a ditch.
No, I was on the rope ladder.
You were.
I was on the rope ladder.
A rope ladder.
Yeah.
Between two hills.
Yeah.
So. Some people remember you from when you were on your higher peak.
Yeah.
But you knew nearly all of them because you were a fan of Deal or No Deal. You were like, oh my God, it was you. You were Mickey Mouse Band a couple of weeks ago. And they were like, we don't know who you are. And you were like, oh,
I got very, very drunk. I remember one of that girl who was on for ages who wouldn't, what was her name?
Lucy.
Lucy.
She did 50 episodes from Bristol.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Yeah. She started licking the back of my neck at one point. While I was talking to someone else. It was strange. That's the kind of wild things that go on at the Deal. And I don't think it was a sexual thing. I think it was some kind of greeting. Lizard-like greeting. Mistaken the back of my head for the front of my face.
There was a guy there. Oh, shit. I wish I could remember his name. I think it was like Marcus or Mario or something like that. And he was a young... I remember his game... brilliantly well, because he was... nowadays, when we talk about Deal or No Deal, it does sound like a weird thing to talk about, because, like, no one cares. It's not on anymore. And for a lot of you, you didn't realise it wasn't on anymore. Like, that's how little people... But at the time, like, at that period, they were showing on TV 2 episodes a day. Like, there was during the World Cup in 2006, they would put on two... They would show an episode at 4 o'clock, and at 5 o'clock, Noel would say, see you in 2 hours' time. And then they'd show another one. Right. Like, it was like 25%. The audience share was close to 25%. So a quarter of everyone watching telly was watching Deal or No Deal. The reason they don't have children's ITV on ITV now is that kids stopped watching it because they would watch 22 people open boxes. Like, it was a weird... a phenomenon, but the one I remember was the first guy who thought he was going to win the quarter of a million, and he got down to his final two boxes were a penny and quarter of a million. And he started screaming, I'm going to be the first! I want to be the first! Woo! And the offer he got was something like £90,000. I'm going to be the first! Woo! Yeah! He wasn't the first. Yeah.
It's a cruel game. And I got disenchanted because I thought Noel became too imbued in the mythology of it. I wanted to... He generally started believing boxes were unlucky and lucky and sort of seeing...
The death patterns. Box, number 22.
Yeah, and seeing patterns. And I wanted... I've talked about this before, but I wanted to do a late-night version of it where they showed it again late night. With some mathematical experts doing like a poker commentary over the top of it, going, is that true that the box 22 is? No, there's no statistical evidence that is any more. In fact, if anything, you know, we look at the statistics, we'll see that box has come up an average amount of times.
I find it slightly insulting that you go on about not liking the mythology of it.
Yeah.
Like myself and the Pilgrims. Genuinely, that's what they called them.
Yeah.
The Pilgrims, the Dream Factory, the Walk of Wealth, the Crazy Chair, the Death Box.
What I didn't like was the way he'd make people feel they'd lost if what was in their box was more than what they'd won. That was not true, right? Because they'd won, for a start, because they'd come in with nothing and they left with something. And as a gambler or as a mathematician, you work out whether this was a good time to choose. So it's not what's in your box that matters, it's what you walk away with and whether you made a good choice at the time you did, I think. And that should have been the mark of it. And Noel Edmonds would go, oh, bad luck, you lost. You got £50,000, but you could have had £75,000. So hope you can hold your head up and you walk down the street. People aren't pelting you with shit for your poor decision. For example, if it's 1p or £250,000, you know, that's a crazy, it's slightly crazy to decide to hold out for the £250,000.
But he wanted to be the first.
I know, but he could have had £90,000.
He could have had £90,000. My favourite contestant ever never made it on telly. So they used to stay in a hotel, the Mercure, which is near St. Mary Rec. I'll get really specific with geography. And they used to stay there, and they used to get wankers. Like, every... So we used to do 4 games a day. And so statistically, of those 4 games, someone would win a good amount of money. And so at the end of the day, they put their car behind the bar and people used to get absolutely slaughtered every single day. Shagging. Like, honestly, the scandal behind the scenes of Deal or No Deal was absolutely incredible in this hotel, because there were 22 people plus their family, plus the people who had left that day and the people who were coming the next day. Right. So in this hotel, at any point, 35 rooms, 40 rooms, card, credit card, where people were winning over 15 grand a day, people getting absolutely slaughtered. And thousands of people were applying to be on this show. Like, hundreds of thousands of people every time an application would come in, and you'd have to go to auditions and screen tests. And the process of getting on was incredibly difficult. And this one bloke made it, and he got on, and he got to the hotel, and he was told he was going to play the next day, and he got so excited and got drunk and ended up in reception at 3 o'clock in the morning covered in his own shit.
On a Bristol stool chart, what kind of shit?
And it wasn't even in the safe zone of 4, 5 and 6. It was like an 8. And he never made it. They didn't let him on. They went, "You've embarrassed yourself. That's not..."
He could have washed. They couldn't let him wash.
I don't think they were expecting him to go on covered it. But yeah, no, he walked up covered in his own shit and went, "Oh, I'm really sorry. I think I've just pooed in the hallway." Like, the chance of getting on Deal or No Deal was less than winning on Deal or No Deal. Like, the big thing was getting on, and he fucked it up by shitting himself the night before going on.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like, a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
I love that.
Another of the warm-up guys for Deal or No Deal has been quite disparaging about it, and I don't know how openly he's been about the way he was treated, which is Ian Boldsworth, who's been on this show before.
Yeah.
I can't remember if he talked about it in our podcast, but he's talked about it on his website. And
yeah,
stuff
and
like
he's
that.
Done, I think he did a bit in an Edinburgh show about it. He's done stand-up about it. Quite a lot of people have done stand-up about it. I think Ellis James has. Yeah. John Robbins did it for a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, quite a lot of people have. So I don't know. I mean, you're treated fairly badly doing warm-up.
Yeah.
Like, because you're not... In TV, like, talent is, you know, key.
Yeah.
And so, as the warm-up, you just try and not fuck them off.
Yeah.
You know, I did some warm-up on Friday for an advert.
Okay.
It was an advert that was meant to look like a theatre comedy club environment. Okay. And I got called at 8 o'clock in the morning. And my job was to entertain the audience while the advert wasn't being filmed.
Right.
But the audience were paid extras. So they didn't care. But also the director was having to direct them to get the shots as the day went on. And I got there at 8 and I went on at 6 p.m.
Right.
I just sort of sat about. But people forget about the warm-up to the extent where I literally played a game where I tried to... There's a bit in Guardians of the Galaxy 2, I think, where Drax... Is it Guardians of the Galaxy 2 or Avengers? I feel like I'm in the audience where one of you will know the answer to this.
I think they will.
Where Drax the Destroyer tries to make himself invisible. What is it?
Galaxy 2.
Thanks, mate. I did that for 4 hours.
Right.
Sat at the back of the theatre, not moving, to see if anyone would notice I was there.
Right.
And they noticed. 8 hours later.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is tricky, so it's a difficult thing to do well.
Have you ever done it?
No, I would be bad at it. I've compared stand-up gigs, which is the closest I can get to, which is still a long, long way away from it. And you do that, you compare something, which I know you do lots of compare, and you've won awards for being a compare, but...
I haven't.
Have you not? Oh, you got nominated. You got nominated for a...
Once,
yeah, that's good. I'm going to give you an award for it. I think you're a very good compare. You are an excellent compare, but it's that thing, and the typical thing about compare is the audience come up to you after and go, you were pretty good, mate, you should try and be one of the proper comedians. You should give it a go. Did you ever get that? That's what... No, okay, just me. Just me then. But you know, so people sort of think you're, you know, they think you're just there as a buffer between the acts when you're the compere, and clearly that's a higher status job than warm-up.
Yeah, but I'm sort of happy with that.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's...
I'm happy. The great thing about comparing is I always say, especially to new acts, I always say, look, fact of the matter is, if the gig goes well, you can take credit for it because people will go, oh, mate, you compared that gig amazingly. Well done, you. And I'm like, thank you very much. I was absolutely brilliant. And then if it's shit, you just go, yeah, it was the act's fault. It was like, it's brilliant. Like, you don't... And TV warm-up is exactly the same. Yeah. Doing TV warm-up is like doing a gig like this with this beautiful lighting and this beautiful... I've done a gig... I've done warm-up in here
right.
for Noel Edmonds' Christmas presents.
Okay. People were quite impressed by that. There's for them. Ooh.
Which was amazing, but I had to do 45 minutes because a woman in... Not you, it wasn't you, but where that woman was sat, someone threw up. And they had to... Because it's such a beautiful old theatre, they had to really carefully mop up the sick.
Yeah.
So I had to spend 45 minutes warming up while they were messing up the sick there.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's... I don't see it as... It's not a glamorous job. I'm doing warm-up on Friday for celebrity dressage, and I'm on... I'm on while they rake the sand. I did it... my favourite ever warm-up was a programme that did really badly called Duel with Nick Hancock.
Okay, D-U-E-L or G...
D-U-A-L.
Oh, Jewel. There's three. I didn't even think of that meaning of it.
Hold on, which one am I...
We've got a fly coming in. Have you brought this fly from the dressage with you? Is this the horse shit?
Hold on. No. It might...
Jewel, was it like a jewel? Or was it like... Jewel would be D-U-E-L. Jewel, like you're going to win a jewel, J-E-W-E-L... Or Duel, like there's two different ways this could go. G-D-U-A-L. Ironically, there's three meanings to Duel, which must be... They should have stopped that and said, well, we can't call it Duel because there's three meanings. And probably someone's going to think of a fourth one in a second.
Two people...
Yeah.
...sat on a drum, a big stage area, a round okay. stage area, facing each other, answering questions in kind of like... competitive.
Well, I mean, that could be Jewel or Jewel. I mean, it's probably, unless they were going to win a Jewel, then it's not Jewel.
So at least we've won. So if they're going to win a duel, it could still be duel. But I think it's... I would say it's probably duel. But they might have gone, hey, it's quite clever because there's two of them. Let's call it duel. And then people might think it's... I wonder if it's duel. And then people go, how are we going to Google this? I don't know.
I think it was that one.
Well, do you? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Because they tried to make it quite combative. They tried to... The two contestants, Nick Hancock was already on the centre. Okay. And the centre was like...
Was he in the centre of the drum in between the two people?
He was on the centre of the drum.
Was he dressed as a jewel?
No, he wasn't. Okay. Or as a jester. No, he wasn't. And there was a big gap. It was 8 foot off the ground.
Yeah.
So the Steadicam operator could get this amazing shot with his Steadicam running around the gap between the audience, gap, drum area.
Right.
And... it was all very dramatic. I think I've painted it with words to feel dramatic.
Yeah.
And there was these two bridges that the two contestants walked across to get onto the drum.
Yeah.
And they walked across, and then the bridges went away.
Oh, shit.
And it was like, oh, like that's tense, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, if they fall off, they might fall off. They might forget that the bridges have gone and they might fall off. I'd be worried about that.
Well,
did anyone fall off?
It was all going very well until the day that one of the bridge operators thought that the contestant was already on the drum. Pulled the bridge back, and because it was pitch black, the bloke just vanished. And it was an 8 foot drop onto a concrete floor, and he just fucking went. And so whenever anything like that happens, literally the first thing that the floor manager director will do is automatically go, call warm up. So I walked on over the bridge that was still there. Nick Hancock ran off.
Yeah.
First aid went to this bloke. And I was attempting to entertain the audience.
Oh, I thought you were telling jokes to the guy. You go, well, you know, it's like when you've got two broken legs.
No, but all I could hear was below me, this bloke going, I've broken my leg. I think I've broken my leg. It's really dark down here. Is that... Oh, fuck. I nearly found some fireworks. There's some pyrotechnics next to me. I've broken my leg. So, everyone, what's your favourite motorway service station? And, that was 30 minutes. Ow! Ow! Yeah, I mean, so it's like... You do the job. Just do the job.
I did. I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about it. It was in Bristol. I did Tipping Point Lucky Stars. And I can't tell you what happened. You'll have to wait till it's on. But they were saying, Ben Shepherd, who I'm trying to get on this show, was obsessed with Tipping Point. He said that, again, it's one of those things where the machine is much... It's all a bit smaller than you think it is.
Yes.
But you're sort of you're facing a different direction than you think you want. It's all there. And the day before, Rusty Lee had fallen into the machine. Yeah. I hope that'll make it onto the show.
I did a couple of episodes of Celebrity Tipping
Point.
Yeah. And again,
Tipping Point Lucky Stars, please.
Tipping Point Lucky Stars. And I don't know if... So we'll see when that goes out and when this goes out. But Alex Brooker was on from The Last Leg. And I know Alex Brooker quite well. It was Alex Brooker, a guy from Emmerdale, and Joey Essex.
Yeah.
And if you don't know Tipping Point, brackets, Tipping Point Lucky Stars, you basically make money from how many of the counters go down.
Yeah.
That's right, isn't
it?
Yeah. You answer a question, you give in a counter, like that thing in fairgrounds and on piers.
Piers, yeah.
The coins come out, that's how much you win. And Joey Essex was answering the general knowledge questions on brand. And you play the first round, and the top two winners go through to the final round. Mm-hmm. And as a fan, so I don't really watch it, at Pointless Till I Die, but how many counters do people normally get?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I realised when I played it that it's
difficult.
Well, it's just complete luck. And so I played quite tactically and got rid of the... Well, I tried to get rid of... Let's not give anything away. Tried to get rid of the person I thought was the biggest threat by going over... And often he...
Was it Rusty Lee?
It was. And he literally got nothing. He was so angry with me, this guy, because I would just go, I'll pass that one, and then nothing would come out. And then I got... And I was up against then someone on Love Island. Let's say I got through to the second bit. And... Real, you know, and she got like about 15 out of with the one question she got right.
Joey Essex got 20. Joey Essex answered one question correct,
yeah,
and 20 tokens came out. And Alex Brooker, we filmed it ages ago, he is still angry about that. And it was the funniest thing about it, and I don't know if you hear it on the TV, but it's the noise of the counters, because they're quite big. So you just heard this Niagara Falls.
It is, and I want you to know before you watch mine, it's all luck. That's what I'm saying. That's the whole game is luck. But yeah, so it's great. Yeah, it's crazy. But it's good. I mean, you're doing actually, like, financially, you must be doing better than most comedians. Because you're working constantly.
I bought a house in Bristol 10 years ago. Oh, sorry, you mean work?
Yeah. But, you know, you are working... you're doing four shows...
Does people know?
Four shows...
Buy a house in Bristol, 2009, 2010.
Yeah.
Because I think Totterdown has sort of priced out a lot of people, really. And I think, especially because of the parking situation around there, whereas sort of the Arnis Vale area, especially with the work that's happening in Paintworks at the moment, they're not sure if they're going to build the arena or not, but I think some of the infrastructure that's happening down there, I think, has really helped.
Okay.
Sort of the Bath Road area.
But you've worked constantly for like 15 years, that must be. It's 15 years of doing, you know, you're still doing stand-up, you're still doing comparing. We should talk about your club as well, but yeah, and we'll talk about your charity. Oh, there's so little time, we've had so much fun. But you know, that constant work, getting paid, doing TV every day, most people get on TV and then they fuck up somehow. They say something racist or sexist.
And I can say all that, and it doesn't
matter. Okay.
Yeah, oh, no, I am, staying... I was never as good a comic as any of my friends. Like, I'm sort of quite lucky. So I started gigging in October 1998 and in a gig called Virgin Murph, which was on Park Street, which is in a place called... I think it's now called The Ram, but it was called The Chateau at the time. And there was a gig every fortnight, and I did it one fortnight, and then 2 weeks later, Russell did it. And so we've known each other from that moment, and I had an all right gig, and then 2 weeks later, I just went, well, you're going to be famous, aren't you? So from that moment, I never bothered with trying to be the best comic or trying to be the most successful comic, or trying to do any of that. I simply just wanted to earn a living from it.
Yeah.
Like, it was like the least glamorous way of viewing stand-up comedy. I was just like, I'm a working class boy from one of the more boring parts of Bristol. Like, I live in Brislington and grew up in Brislington, and like, Brislington is just a place you go through. there's not... is there any prison to be in? Where are you?
New Tesco.
New Tesco's. Oh, my mum and dad are at the bottom of Talbot Road. Boring, innit? Nothing there.
Nothing.
No.
Tars ice cream.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is Tars ice cream. Tars ice cream.
Tars ice cream.
But you just go through, get yourself an ice cream.
Yeah. <It's great. laughs> That bloke, he comes from Tars ice cream to every one of my gigs. He just tries to shout out. He's just trying to get publicity for Tars ice cream, and everywhere he goes, it's work this time. I bet he's back here next week.
There's... there's another Brislington ice cream claim to fame.
Okay.
Anthony Minghella.
Yeah.
The director.
The famous ice cream making director
Anthony
of Truly Magella, Madly Deeply.
Minghella, the director of English Patient.
Truly Madly Deeply.
Yep.
Yeah.
His family owned an ice cream shop up near Brislington School and St. Brendan's College.
Wow. And Tars ice cream put him out of business because of his superior ice cream.
It's fucking good ice cream. It really is amazing. The queue. Anyway, yeah. So growing up in that area and being able to pay any amount of money to talk shit and to talk to people for a living.
Yeah,
like I genuinely just blown away to just be able to do that.
Yeah,
and then all of my friends, you know, doing all these amazing things. I'm like, well, brilliant. But like, look at me. I've got a 10% Miss Millie's discount card. first bus to a one-stop hop, three-stop hop for £1.20 into Temple Meads. I made it. It used to be a pound, went up 20p. Yeah. Livid. But because of the work that they're doing by Temple Meads at the moment, the distance I can get on a three-stop hop is fucking insane at the moment. Honestly, wasn't expecting an applause break.
Well, you still do stand. Well, I have to say,
no one wants to talk about anything apart from the roadworks around Bristol.
We can talk about that. But the gigs I did, you know, you did the gigs at Richmond Springs. It's called something else now. You told me before. But
I ran a gig called Clifton Comedy that became Oppo.
Yeah.
And I did that at Channing's. I did that. It's called Oppo because there was a place on Park Street. That I think is now a shisha bar, on the corner by where GBK was, above there.
Yeah.
So it's called Oppo, and so it's gone there, and Channing's, and it's now back at the White Rabbit that was the Richmond Spring.
Right.
The Richmond Spring was, like, you did the Richmond Spring.
It was a great gig.
You headlined the Richmond Spring with one of your first, like, straight stand-up shows, weren't you, when you did the yogurt show?
Yeah.
And you were doing it, a guy called Matt Rudge was on first, and at about, like, 8 o'clock, like half an hour before the show was going up, I got a phone call from Russell Brand, who wanted to do an open spot. Like, it was... The Flight of the Conchords did it.
Yeah.
The Flight of the Conchords... It holds 60 people, and the Flight of the Conchords, in the year after... The year they were nominated for the main award in Edinburgh, so 2004, did 2 hours. 2 hour-long sets... which I still have a bootleg mini disc of.
Shame there's no way to play mini discs anymore, so no, we'll never hear that.
I mean, the shows we had there are amazing. Yeah. But do you know what? The shows we still have there are amazing. So Acaster did it last year. Acaster did it he did a preview of the show that he's doing now, and we booked it in on, I can't remember what the exact date was, but it coincided with the Croatia-England semi-final in the World Cup last year. And so they had the pub absolutely packed with people watching the football. Yeah. And then we got rid of them, and then James Acaster went on and did an hour and a half in the Richmond Brick. Like, amazing.
And you're doing lots of charity gigs as well, which is fantastic. So you do Belly Laughs, is that the... Did you do some stuff for homeless people and some stuff for...
So Belly Laughs is a project that I do that is going into its third year. Uh-huh. And I don't know... Has anyone been to a Belly Laugh? Oh, so a couple, so that's nice. I mean, not enough, but, you know, that's fine. So Belly Laughs, I came up with the idea for Belly Laughs in December 2017. I was doing the warm-up for... I don't know if you know, I do a little bit of warm-up. And a little bit. For Big Fat Quiz of the Year.
Oh, yeah.
And Big Fat Quiz of the Year goes on for about 5.5 hours. And I was sat backstage, and I was on Twitter, and I was reading about all these restaurants in Bristol doing their deals for January, 30 quid off, free bottle of wine, all that sort of stuff. And I thought, genuinely, I thought to myself, hold on, if these people are
trying to do deals to get people into their restaurants in January. I reckon I could do a gig in one of these restaurants and they could maybe give me a burger.
It was actually, it was genuinely even more specific than that. There's a place in St. Werburgh's called The Cauldron. I mean, genuinely, like, that is the sound of 45 people getting semi-erection.
Yeah, it was.
Al dente. And I genuinely thought, I'll do a gig in The Cauldron and maybe they'll give me a Sunday roast. The Sunday roast is the best Sunday roast in Bristol. And I was like, so, and then I realised that actually, if I was doing that, I'm doing all right for myself. I can buy my own burger and Sunday roast. And so I thought we could do it into a thing. So basically what I do, in January, I find restaurants. They get all the food money. They get all the booze money. They pay, audiences pay like a tenner as a supplement on top of the food to watch comedy. And all that money then goes to the Julian Trust homeless shelter in Bristol, but we're doing it in a couple of other places, so it'll be the homeless shelters in Wales and in Bath and in Devon, so specifically there. And they're amazing. So we did like a festival. So yeah, so I did it in the end of 2017 and the first gig was like 2 weeks later, and we did about 30 gigs that month. This year, 2019, we did about 45 gigs. We did a little comedy festival in Wapping Wharf where we had like 15 venues, sometimes doubling up, about 35 comics going to performing in front of 6 people or 150 people. Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah, it's my favourite thing at the moment. And we're doing it again in 2020 and going bigger again.
Brilliant, brilliant.
But we're also doing... Because I like putting gigs on in places that that you just fucking do a gig. Because I compare so much. I'm fairly good at trying to work out how to make a room feel like a room. I mean, because you are now at the back at the top of your hill, you get to do amazing theatres.
I do sometimes, yeah.
But in a couple of weeks' time, I'm doing a gig for an amazing charity called Fair Share, who get surplus food and then distribute it to any charity and any place that needs it. And we're doing a gig in their warehouse,
right
behind Cabot Circus. John Richardson on the... This is going out after this.
Yeah, I'll just tell people.
John Richardson on the 18th of November, and then I'm doing a gig with Angela Barnes on the 19th of November in the Fair Share warehouse.
Yeah.
Fair Share... Does anyone know Fair Share? The fuck it, it's unbelievable the stuff they do. Do you know about this charity?
Well, I've only just from reading about it today. Yeah, that's it.
They're a national charity, and basically, there's a thing that if you get your food from like Waitrose or Tesco's or Ocado and it's delivered to your house, if you're not there, the fresh stuff just goes to landfill.
Right.
So Fair Share take that fresh stuff and give it out to rehab centres and after-school clubs and breakfast clubs. It's fucking amazing. Yeah. The food stuff. I think I'm bored of comedy now. I think the food stuff. I mean, the food... I find the food scene much more interesting than the comedy scene now.
Yeah. Well, it's good to give something back. We're going to have to leave it there, but we're leaving it on you looking like a fucking hero, so I guess that's all right, isn't it? Ladies and gentlemen, the amazing Matt Bomer! He's one of yours. Thank you very much. Go and have a drink and a wee. We'll be back for some more. I mean, we won't next week.
You have been listening to Hello Stepper with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Mark Olver. Thank you very much to Pest for just putting the time in to write and perform this song for us. I never think I can thank them enough for that. And I hope I never get to the point where I think I thank them enough, because that would be wrong. Thank you to everyone at the Bristol Old Vic, what truly one of the greatest venues in the country, and that fantastic audience we had there. Thank you to everyone at GoFaster Strike, Acast and the British Comedy Guide. What a lovely year it's been. Thank you to my producer James Hingley. I'm also indebted to my tour producer Ben Walker, and of course, what can I say about my executive producer? Well, I can't even say his title. What can I say about him? He is called Niall Porter. He really dug in deep in this one, provided the extra funds we needed to really go that extra mile and give you this fantastic podcast. This is a FuzzGoFusterStripe.com and SkyPlato production. Go to richtang.com/gigs. You could be part of the fun, you could be part of the audience in Leicester, in Birmingham, or in London, or one of the many other places that I'm sure I will be. In 2020, just keep your eyes on the prize and on that site, and you shall see where I will be. Have a lovely 2020, my fine friends. My fine, fine friends. Thank you for your support. I love you more than you will ever know.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com, you can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show if enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.